Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today, after the first commercial break, will be the Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network. He's going to be talking about some pending hate crimes legislation that is most likely to be reintroduced into the current session of the United States Congress, specifically the United States Senate. What is hate crimes legislation? What would it mean for you or for me if this legislation were to pass? Who's behind it and why? These are some of the things we're going to be exploring with Ted Pike after the first commercial break. I don't think you're going to be disappointed in what he has to say in regard to the wealth of information that he presents. You're likely to be very disturbed, however, by the implications of what he presents to us and what it might mean for your First Amendment rights and mine in the days that are ahead. We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by the Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network, who's going to be talking about the pending reintroduction of hate crimes legislation into the halls of the United States Senate. We're going to talk about hate crimes legislation in regard to the specifics of these bills in question and discuss who's behind this hate crimes legislation, what the real implications are for you and for me, and why there is so little coverage of this on the part of corporate media. Before I introduce Reverend Pike, I wanted to mention briefly two other news stories. Check out today in Australia, news.com.au, where we discover that Australia's spy agency was tricked by Israel into believing that Bob Hawke was the target of a Palestinian assassination plot, the former Palestinian ambassador to Australia said today. Cabinet documents from 30 years ago released today indicate that Bob Hawke, then Labor Party and ACTU president, faced the possibility of assassination at the hands of Palestinian militants for his strong pro-Israel views. But former Palestinian ambassador for Australia in the South Pacific, Ali Kazak, says the whole plot was designed by the Israeli spy agency Mossad and accepted without investigation by the Australian Security Intelligence Organization. Mr. Kazak said today, quote, "It has never been the intention of Palestine to bring this Middle Eastern conflict to Australia, and we made this clear to the Australian Security Intelligence Organization. This was part of Mossad's campaign against Palestine," quote unquote. Bob Hawke has not returned calls today. Keep an eye on that story at news.com.au, coming to us again from Australia. Pastor Ted Pike, how are you, sir?
Real good. Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Well, I've been wanting to get you on this show for some time. You know, it's interesting. You're not going to believe this, but many years ago, going back to the late 1980s, I was the number two guy on a talk show on a 50,000-watt Christian radio station in Seattle. And being pretty naive politically at that time as a mainstream conservative Republican, I was invited to Anti-Defamation League headquarters in Seattle for a luncheon. I was the only Christian clergyman there, except for one other one who already had ties to both the ADL and a group called Bridges for Peace. And at any rate, there were a group of Jewish rabbis there, and Rabbi Yechiel Eckstein of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews was present as the main speaker, as well as a guy named Jan Vanderhoven, who was the head of, at that time, the head of the so-called International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. I had no idea why I was invited there by the regional director of the Anti-Defamation League in Seattle. I have many more understandings of that all these years later. But at the time, there was a file that was passed around with some deletions in it by the ADL, which made reference to some really bad people in the United States that were stirring up the winds of anti-Semitism. And I noticed the name of Reverend Ted Pike and the National Prayer Network was in this ADL file. And at the time, not understanding the context of any of it, I thought to myself, boy, this must really be a nefarious character. And here we are 20 years later, and you and I are on the same talk show. And I have come to understand that you're not a bad guy at all, but basically you've been telling the truth all along. But go ahead. Go ahead.
That's pretty incredible. You know, back just about at that time, in 1987, I produced my first major video documentary called The Other Israel. And it was very widely sold. I think we sold 10,000 copies just in a couple of months. And there was a Messianic Jew, that would be about 1987, who went down to ADL headquarters in Seattle. He's supposed to be a Christian Jew. and he got a complete briefing from the ADL, and he went on talk radio for a whole afternoon in Seattle, talk Christian talk radio, bad-mouthing me and maligning me and misrepresenting me. Anyway, he had said that he had had a private conversation with the ADL about Ted Pike, and this corroborates what you're saying. They were very aware of me, and they said that they were going to destroy Ted Pike and the National Prayer Network within the next year. That was 1987.
Well, I think possibly the reason for some of that nonsense going on at the time in terms of contacting me was that I was a Lutheran pastor, and there was a Lutheran seminary up there that I guess had shown your film, The Other Israel.
Yes, I remember that. Uh-huh.
And when the ADL contacted me, they were looking for a Lutheran pastor who didn't know what was going on at the time, which yeah. was me, to comment on all of this. And I basically said, hey, I haven't seen this thing. I have no idea. But at any rate, they subsequently invited me to this ADL luncheon where I felt that I was being probed to see if I might be an available recruit for some of their activities.
Yeah.
And frankly, I felt very creepy about the whole thing.
Yes.
And that encounter with these guys at this luncheon was the beginning of an odyssey that led to where I am today on some of these subjects, which is a far different place than I was back in the days when I was voting for guys like Jack Kemp and pretty much accepting the influence of the Israeli lobby in Republican yes. politics. But certainly the fact that you were in that file suggests that they were very worried about the information that you were conveying to the public, and specifically the information that you were conveying within evangelical Christian circles, which painted a far different picture of Israel and of the Israeli lobby than obviously the ADL wanted anybody to find out about.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of this current hate crimes legislation that I guess the ADL helped to get introduced in the United States Senate last year, and that apparently is about to make its appearance again as early as this week, what is behind this? What is this hate crimes legislation? And what does it mean for you and for me and for all of our listeners in regard to its potential passage?
Yes, the great danger that's facing all of the Western industrialized democracies now is so-called anti-hate legislation, thought crimes legislation, speech crimes laws, and so on. This is all the work of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. Now, a little bit of background on B'nai B'rith. B'nai B'rith is a huge Jewish, fraternal, educational, and charitable organization. It has about 500,000 Jewish members worldwide, presences in 55 member nations of the world. It is the architect behind the whole idea that bias against federally protected groups equals hate and a possible hate crime. And this twisted definition, which the ADL and the B'nai B'rith enforce throughout their hate crimes bureaucracies, automatically, you see, makes Christians into haters and potential hate criminals, because the Holy Scriptures are very biased against homosexuality, calling it an abomination, and so on. So the Bible itself, you see, becomes hate literature, and those who subscribe to the biblical prohibitions against homosexuality and so on, by definition, become hate criminals. Now, this is obviously a very sinister noose, an ideological noose which ADL B'nai B'rith are putting around all of Christianity, making the Christian into a hate criminal if he continues to subscribe to biblical concepts.
Would, in your judgment, this bill potentially also extend to people in the Christian community and outside of it who have been speaking out in regard to the Israeli lobby and its nefarious influence in American domestic politics?
Well, you see, the ADL is basically asserting. Let me give you a bit of background. Several years ago, the Congress of the United States basically set up ADL B'nai B'rith in the U.S. State Department with a big office of the Department of Global Anti-Semitism. And this front organization for ADL B'nai B'rith is the beginnings of a hate crimes Gestapo here in the United States. Now, we don't have big federal hate law, but we do have the ADL B'nai B'rith people pontificating, laying down definitions and so on right out of our U.S. State Department. And last year they came out with one of their first major reports of anti-Semitism throughout the world, and they have about 14 different criteria of what is anti-Semitism. And I do have a major articles on that at my website, which is truthtellers.org. And in those criteria, they state very clearly that any criticism, any vehement criticism of the government of Israel, the leaders of Israel, is anti-Semitism. Any cartoons of the government, the leadership of Israel as Nazis or in any kind of terms like that is anti-Semitic. Any idea that there's a Zionist conspiracy to take over the world or a Zionist excessive Zionist influence in Congress through AIPAC, they say that's anti-Semitic. And then they go further and they say that if you say that the Jews 2,000 years ago, that is the Jewish leaders, had Christ crucified, that's anti-Semitic. So what they're doing is they're broadening, continuing to widen and broaden the term anti-Semitism to make that a hate crime, actually an act of domestic terrorism. You know, Ernst Zundel was deported to Germany. This is the Holocaust reductionist up in Canada. And the government of Canada said that because he criticized the numbers of the Holocaust and reduced those in numbers, he was being deported as a domestic terrorist. And that's the ultimate objective of this hate crimes conspiracy, is to make all of us into hate criminals, anti-Semites, and so on, so that we become seditionists. We actually become suspects who are interfering and restraining the effectiveness of our cooperation with Israel in the war against terror.
So in terms of the Ernst Zundel case and also the David Irving case, Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review was on this show a few days ago talking about the implications of those cases. In your judgment then, Reverend Pike, I'll continue with this question after the break. Wanted to ask you something about the potential for that type of thing to be entering into the United States if this hate crimes legislation should pass the Senate and the House. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be back with Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network. Stay tuned. We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is the Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network. You can get to Ted's site at truthtellers.org, where you can read specifically what is behind this hate crimes legislation and what it means if this should eventually pass the United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives. I notice in Reverend Pike's particular discussion of this in regard to last year's introduction in the 109th Congress of Senate Bill 1145, that he gives a lot of commentary within the text of that bill. His commentary is highlighted in red with some discussion to guide you and me, the readers, in regard to what some of the language of this bill actually means. And when you look at some of the sponsors of this bill that are listed at the top of the page at www.truthtellers.org, there are some of the usual suspects there. Ted Kennedy, Mr. Arlen's single bullet theory specter is there. Joe Lieberman, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Chuck Schumer, Lincoln Chafee, some of the usual folks that we tend to see in connection with these things. Dianne Feinstein, Daniel Inouye of Hawaii, some of the usual players in these types of activities suddenly appear again in regard to the sponsorship of this legislation, which I guess is going to be introduced again in the United States Senate and in the House. And we will have to watch this very, very closely to see where it ends up in regard to the wording and modifications of this bill, in regard to its status in the relevant committees in both the Senate and the House, and what it means for you and for me if this whole thing should end up reaching the floor of both houses of Congress. Ted, we were talking a little bit before the break about some of the things that this proposed hate crimes legislation would criminalize. And again, keeping in mind what you've already mentioned about the Ernst Zundel case and the David Irving case, it seems to me that if this hate crimes legislation should pass in this country, we would literally be dealing with a circumstance whereby For example, I'm an Orthodox Evangelical Lutheran pastor. If I cited certain passages from the Gospel of John in the New Testament, which quite clearly outline the direct role, the central role of the Jewish religious leadership at that time in the false accusations against Jesus Christ and his subsequent crucifixion, that I would be guilty of a hate crime under this proposed federal legislation. If I preach from Romans chapter 1 in the New Testament and underline the kinds of things that the Apostle Paul has to say there about sexual perversion generally and homosexuality and lesbianism specifically, I could be prosecuted under this hate crimes legislation. And just last night I had a contact from Mark Glenn at Crescent and Cross telling me about a conference in Los Angeles that will be held at the end of March, and that conference will have as its theme that there should be no more wars being fought on the part of the United States for the State of Israel. There are a number of people that have been invited to that conference. I happen to have accepted an invitation to that as of last night. So what you're saying is that I potentially fit the profile of the type of person that could wind up in the slammer or on the receiving end of federal prosecution for all kinds of perceived crimes if this whole thing were to become reality.
Well, that's certainly where it's going to lead. Actually, the bill here in the United States is different from in Canada, where they don't have First Amendment protections up there. Up in Canada and in European countries, all you have to do to be guilty of a hate crime is to hurt the feelings of some member of a federally protected group, such as a homosexual or a Jew. For example, in Canada, if you in any way diminish the 6 million figure of the Holocaust, instantly that becomes a hate crime in Canada. In Canada, if you say on the radio that homosexuals have a higher rate of AIDS than the rest of the population, holding them up to a supposed public contempt, that's a hate crime. But here in the United States, the ADL has to take things just a little slower in a federal hate bill. And so what this federal hate bill ostensibly addresses is the problem of this epidemic of hate, so-called epidemic of hate in America, and violent hate crimes. And so what this legislation does, it's called the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act, is to give the federal government pretty much complete powers to invade states' rights in law enforcement in order to prosecute and investigate violent hate crimes. Now, on the surface, that seems like a pretty good idea, you know. Remember Matt Shepard and in other instances, what the ADL basically says to these members of Congress and their staffs is that the states haven't been doing their job in enforcing hate laws out in the rural areas and so on. We need a comprehensive federal mandate to come down, whether the states like it or not, and go after those hate criminals and bigots and cross burners and all that kind of stuff out in the boonies of America. But eventually, I'll talk about this a little more in a minute, this kind of a law will very quickly degenerate into a speech crimes law.
This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is the Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network, which you can find at truthtellers.org. Reverend Pike, we were talking before the station break about this whole business of federal hate crimes legislation as it pertains to the federalization of local law enforcement to implement the enforcement of the particular provisions of this hate crimes legislation. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, we have to be very clear that the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act is getting its foot in the door. It is a way to get around the First Amendment. You see, in countries that don't have the First Amendment, it's really easy for the ADL to outlaw speech crimes. And this is what the kings in the 15th centuries did. They said you can't say that about this group or that, and so they could throw people in jail. And it's just about that simple in European countries and Canada. But in America, we have these wonderful free speech provisions guaranteed by the First Amendment. And so what this bill is, this is basically a huge federal takeover of local law enforcement. Now, Now, in our history, we have a tradition of states' rights, and some of those have been eroded, of course, starting especially with the New Deal in the 30s and so on. But as it stands right now, it is not permitted for the federal government to come down and interfere in local law enforcement except in certain unique situations. For example, if there's jury tampering, or if there's slavery in the state, or if there's interstate commerce involving hate crimes and nobody knows whose jurisdiction it is. There are barriers to the federal government coming in. This is unacceptable to the ADL. The ADL wants to be able to come in out of their hate crimes the bureaucracy, to come down anytime they want to and tell the local attorney generals and justice departments and so on to get out of the way, because they are going to prosecute hate crimes under federal law, and they are going to be able to even reverse jury decisions. They're going to come down and meddle in just general felonies in the states. This is a unification of federal law enforcement and local law enforcement. Now, when you have no barriers between federal law enforcement and local law enforcement, that is the very definition of a police state. Now, for the moment, the ADL is saying, this legislation is not a speech crime bill. This is simply to eliminate violent hate crimes in the states. You know, that's exactly what ADL told the parliament in Canada, in Sweden, in Germany, on and on and on. First they say, you've got a big problem with persecution of minorities and immigrants and so on out in the provinces. We need a federal hate bill to take care of violent hate crimes in the provinces. So these governments have all said, hey, that sounds good. You know, this is a big problem. It's a very black and white issue. They vote in this new type of justice system, which is a bias-oriented justice system. You see, our traditional Anglo-Saxon law says the police have got to find hard evidence before they can arrest, and certainly before an indictment can come down. You've got to find broken bones, smashed windows, physical, tangible evidence. But what the ADL sets up in these nations is takes over is a dual justice system, which is bias-oriented, and they set up these hate crimes tribunals in which the only criteria of whether a hate crime has occurred is whether a member of a federally protected group, such as homosexuals, Jews, and so on, have had their delicate emotions battered or held in contempt by the speech of another person. And if their feelings have been hurt, then that is a bona fide basis for a hate crimes indictment. Now, in the United States, we don't honor that. We say, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words cannot harm me, and the courts have upheld that. What this law will do is it'll set up this same dual bias-oriented justice system here in the United States. And as soon as it does that, what will happen is this bill will be passed ostensibly only to eliminate violent hate crimes in the states and give the federal government greater power and authority in the states to enforce a prosecution of such crimes. But what will happen after this legislation is passed is immediately there will be cases which will have to be adjudicated. That is, judged by federal judges, local judges, and so on, and then it'll become a free-for-all, as it has in all these other countries, where judges from the bench expand the original law, expand the original bias-oriented justice system to provide and to placate the hurt feelings of all of these minorities who want to be part of take part in status as federally protected groups. And so what the local judges and the federal judges will do out of this law is they'll have a holistic kind of a holistic mentality, which says, oh no, it's not complete just to provide remedies and penalties for physical hate crimes. We have to address emotional and the emotional hurt which violent verbal violence and violent speech and unkind, unloving, hateful, and hurtful speech has upon certain beleaguered minorities, you see. And so when these judges begin to expand the original federal hate bill, all of that will become established in law as legal precedent. And this is what exactly has happened in all these other countries. The original hate law is got in by the pretext that it's just a bill against putting down violent hate crimes in the provinces. Inevitably, it expands out to a speech crimes law as verbal violence, not just physical violence, but verbal violence, which means unkind words, criticisms, homophobic language, biblical language, all of that becomes basically against the hate crimes definitions.
Yes, I definitely follow your argumentation on this, and quite clearly the draconian implications of this are almost beyond belief. And to me, just looking even at the foreign policy implications of this, Michael Collins Piper, I don't know if you would agree with this characterization or not, but in his book, The Judas Goats, he makes it pretty clear that the Anti-Defamation League can fairly be seen as an extension of the Israeli intelligence community. You basically then would, if that characterization is correct, and I believe it to be, then you would have a circumstance where, again, mere criticism of the neoconservative character of our foreign policy and the disproportionate influence of AIPAC and some of these other groups in shaping that foreign policy could in and of itself subsequently be determined to be a hate crime, and with the full weight of the federal judiciary and the federal law enforcement community coming down on people, journalists and others, mostly in the non-mainstream journalistic community, who've been trying to speak out on some of this stuff.
Yes, I have a brochure I just got from West Virginia, which is an ADL brochure against hate crimes, and they are claiming in there that hate crimes are terrorism. They're calling it terrorism. That's where they want to take the hate crimes agenda. They want to make it a crime against not only a felony against society, but they want to make a crime of sedition against the government, against our military ally Israel, and so on, to criticize the so-called war on terror in the Middle East, Israeli policy in the Middle East, and so on. You know, a lot of people have forgotten that Charles Lindbergh was a strong critic of the international Zionist money changers and so on. And before the Second World War, he made some very strong statements, basically advising the American government not to go chasing off into Europe to defeat Hitler. He said Hitler just wants to go east. He wants to destroy communism. And Lindbergh said, let him go at it, you know, let Hitler destroy communism, and then we'll save a tremendous headache. And how right he was. But the ADL masterminded a sinister plot to round up Lindbergh, and I think it was something like 20 other defendants, for the crime of sedition. They claimed that Lindbergh was undermining America's war effort by these seditious critical statements that we were over there in an irrelevant way, and we should certainly fight the Japanese, but not the Germans. And Lindbergh was indicted. There was a hate crimes, basically a sedition hate crimes trial held, and Lindbergh could have gone to prison under the instigation of this ADL lawsuit, federal lawsuit against Lindbergh and other people. And fortunately, the judge died toward the end of the proceedings, and everybody went free. But this is the ultimate objective, is to make a criticism of federally protected groups, meaning homosexuals, Jews, Chicanos, whatever, not only a federal crime, but a crime which can be prosecuted under Homeland Security. What they want to do is saying a criticism of Israel in this delicate situation we're in the Middle East, and undermining the authority and the credibility of Israel, is basically a weakening a powerful ally America has in the Middle East. And when you're in wartime and you are bad-mouthing a dependable and important ally, that's often considered to be the crime of sedition. So, yes, it is leading to basically giving Michael Chertoff and the ADL the powers to make anti-Semites and hate criminals out of anyone who criticizes Israel. We should remember that in Canada right now, it is a federal crime to be anti-Semitic. And by anti-Semitism, of course, they define anti-Semitism as criticizing anything having to do with matters Jewish. If you criticize the Talmud, if you criticize specific behaviors of Jews and so on, that is anti-Semitism and can be prosecuted under the federal hate law.
What do you make of the fact that Michael Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security, is apparently a dual citizen, both with this country and with Israel, and the fact that Chertoff's mother was an Israeli intelligence agent who was involved in some of the activities that led to the founding of the State of Israel.
Well, not only that, but his wife has been a functionary for the ADL. He is very, very closely, obviously, closely related to the ADL, and I understand his father was also a rabbi. So here we have a person with a very, very strong vested interest, a dual citizen, certainly a spiritual dual allegiance to Israel, a very, very ominous. Here is a person who has power literally to listen in to every conversation we have on the telephone. I called the FBI a while back, and I asked them very specifically, basically, does Michael Chertoff have the prerogative to listen to me as I'm talking on the telephone? And they said yes. Isn't that amazing?
So, yes.
Basically, they said the FBI does. Anytime they want to, Chertoff can listen to me as I'm talking confidentially on any subject. This is way, way, way beyond any prerogatives which any elected official should have, certainly one with such a dubious a set of friends as Michael Chertoff.
Well, as far as this goes, in your judgment, looking at these the USA Patriot Act 1 and 2, the Military Commissions Act of 2006, what is now known, publicly known anyway, about the National Security Agency's warrantless electronic surveillance program, to what extent, in your judgment, has the ADL been directly involved in all of those pieces of legislation that we've seen in recent times, say in the last 5 years since 9/11 in particular?
Well, as far back as Janet Reno, as Attorney General, she gave direct orders to Bill Sessions, the head of the FBI, to make a very strong bond of communication, a relationship, and endorsement with the ADL. And clear back in the 90s, the FBI and the ADL became basically fused. What the relationship was that the ADL would take over the task of providing undercover, beneath-the-table, illegal information which the FBI could not lawfully obtain. This was just taken for granted because the ADL is not officially a government agency. And so there have been many statements of endorsement and cooperation by Bill Sessions. You know, Bill Sessions routinely appeared at the ADL annual banquets glorifying them and approving them and praising them and all of that kind of thing. And so basically when you say FBI, you've got to say ADL because they are entwined.
Yes, and reading Michael Collins Piper's book, The Judas Goats, he goes into the details of this 1944 sedition trial that you cited, and he also talks about the long-standing relationship between the FBI and the Anti-Defamation League. And again, it seems to me that we're talking about a situation where basic First Amendment rights will be criminalized, people will be ostracized, informally in regard to being able to obtain employment in certain places. The ramifications of this, it seems to me, are just absolutely endless.
Yes.
Is there a reason, and I suspect that I know what you would say, but I think it's something we ought to discuss on the air, isn't there a reason why in terms of the so-called mainstream leaders of the so-called Christian right, and I'm talking about John Hagee of Cornerstone Church here in San Antonio, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson come to mind, James Dobson. Isn't there a reason why the kinds of things that you routinely discuss at the National Prayer Network are never mentioned by any of these people?
Well, there's a long-standing tradition in evangelical Christianity going back really to Oliver Cromwell in the 17th century. Oliver Cromwell invited Manasseh ben Israel, who was the Dutch Jewish leader and cabalist, over to England and received a large loan to finance the Puritan revolt against Charles I. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute.
Very good, Pastor Pike. We'll be back with Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network on Mark Dankos America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned. We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is the Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network, which you can find at www.truthtellers.org, I believe. Isn't it, Pastor Pike?
Yes, it is.
I always have to hesitate. I get comms and orgs mixed up. This is truthtellers.org. And I wanted to warn him that in the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to have a fairly frequent series of commercial breaks and then a longer period of time for conversation again. So he shouldn't be surprised if we're interrupted several times in the flow of conversation. The Republic Broadcasting Network could use your support at rbnlive.com or by calling us at 1-800-724-2719. That's rbnlive.com. Or give the office a call at 1-800-724-2719 if you wish to support the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can also have new RBN T-shirts, which are available at rbnlive.com or at notyranny.com, or again by calling us at 1-800-724-2719. You can also have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism. That will be yours for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling. By again contacting the Republic Broadcasting Network at rbnlive.com or at 1-800-724-2719. Reverend Pike, we were discussing a little bit just before this last commercial break the whole business of the historic linkage of certain elements in the Christian community with Jews, going back again to what you were discussing from the 17th century. Go ahead.
Yes, Oliver Cromwell not only got a big loan from a Jewish Kabbalist, Manasseh ben Israel, in the 17th century, but he allowed the Jews to come back into England. They had been exiled there for several centuries. And since Cromwell, there's been a very, very strong imprint within the evangelical movement that God blesses those who bless the Jewish people. Now, my definition of blessing the Jewish people is evangelizing them and telling the good news of Jesus Christ and how he was the true Messiah and wants to save them from an eternity in hell. And my idea of blessing the Jews is to not persecute them, but give them the same rights and privileges that everybody else has. But the definition of blessing Israel, which has emerged especially in the 20th century, is giving them all the military and moral support and financial support they need to basically bowl their way back into Palestine after 20 centuries being out of it and basically take over the region and intimidate the Arab population, expel them, and commit a whole litany of human rights abuses against them. That's not my idea of blessing Israel. And yet that's the common idea, that we cannot criticize a Jew if some divine curse will descend upon us if we speak a word of criticism against a Jew. That is not the biblical standard. That's not the standard of Isaiah, Jeremiah, John the Baptist, and Jesus Christ, who abundantly criticized the Jews and their leaders. And by the way, that's exactly what I'm doing, is continuing this illustrious tradition of speaking the whole truth to the Jewish leadership and people.
Yes, and that's my perspective as well, which, according to some people, would make us criminals under prospective hate crimes legislation. We will be back with Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network when Mark Dankos America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network.